back, everyone, to Pops Culture. I'm Jackson.
I'm Peyton.
Today is episode 3. We are here, and we got probably too much to talk about, really and truly. But let's talk about last week's reception. Thank you to everybody, once again, who shouted us out and gave us really nice reviews. It means a lot to us. It really does. We had some people say it was some of the best podcasting that they've heard, and that meant a lot for two amateurs like us. I really appreciate it. I know Peyton does.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just keep listening. Give us those listens. Give us some reviews. Subscribe. Give us some follows. Tell all your friends. That's how it works. It keeps us going.
Yeah. Get everybody excited.
Oh yeah, for sure. And also, thank you for liking our top 5 segment. That's something that we're going to continue to do, and we need your help to do it. And we got a banger one for you guys today. But we'll get to that in a little bit. How about the Masters? Old John Rahm getting a comeback victory. That is awesome. We're now like 2 weeks away from him actually winning it, but
yeah.
Hey. He was one of the guys that we called out.
And you know what? It's so funny, too, because that opening hole for him, having a 4-putt on the first hole. But what a way to, like, wipe your mind and keep a strong mentality.
I've never felt more similar to the pros in that John Rahm 4-putts on the very first hole. And then I think it was on Sunday, Brooks Koepka teed off and on 1. And he hit it into the fairway of 9. And I just really relate to that because that's what I do every time I play golf. It was a phenomenal Masters. I mean, it was just a happy, happy time. I enjoyed watching it. It was a great Easter Sunday, too. I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better
it was
time.
A good Easter.
Everything.
The kids had a lot of fun. Did a little Easter egg hunt. I've got this cool little game. It's like a sticky carpet with Velcro golf balls, and you like chip onto it. So we were all playing that in the living room.
Oh, man.
And the Masters on the TV.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. You know what else happened this weekend, though, Peyton, that we really have to talk about?
What is that, Jackson?
Star Wars Celebration. So much
Absolutely.
Stuff has come to the forefront in the Star Wars fandom. And we'd be remiss if we didn't shout out your dad, Chris, for telling us to talk about this. Which, did we need to be told? Probably, because we don't really think about it like that.
I call back to the first episode. I had kind of a hot take that I felt the same way about the Star Wars universe that I do about the DC universe. After this weekend, I completely retract that statement.
Right. Rejuvenation in your fandom. I agree.
This is such a creative way to utilize the Star Wars timeline.
Agreed.
And even Lucas himself has always said that this is something that you're supposed to be able to move back and forth on. There is no, you know, hard set chronology to all of this.
Right. We went 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9.
But in terms of release, these stories are don't have to move in a linear fashion.
Right.
Which is something that's so cool, especially I think one of my favorite projects coming out soon is The Acolyte.
Yeah, that's exciting. To follow like Sith apprentices is really something that I'm biting at the tongue for. I don't think that's the right.
And for that to be the
right
first
way to say it.
That's the first bit of content that we're going to get outside of the books for the High Republic. So like I've read Light of the Jedi and that book is amazing. It's so cool the way that they write that kind of Jedi.
Yeah, it was very interesting to read that one and bounce around to a bunch of different Jedi during like this galactic disaster, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like it was really awesome, and I think they do a good job. But let's go ahead and break down everything that has been announced as coming. So we've seen trailers. So we got 3 new films coming. And to talk about the non-linear timeline here. We got Dave Filoni is finally doing a Mandoverse film, which will be a culmination of all the Disney Plus shows with Mandalorian, Ahsoka, assuming Book of Boba Fett, and from what I hear, a couple more shows outside of those three, which I'm super excited about. That'll be taking place after Return of the Jedi in the timeline. Then you got James Mangold's Dawn of the Jedi film, which I'm really excited about because it's like,
oh, yeah,
we finally get to see an origin story, I would assume, of the Jedi. And that's just a time that I just want to know more about. I want to know how the Jedi came to be, and I want to see that personified on screen.
And he even talked about it, you know, how cool to have and like what he seems to describe as like a biblical film about the Force. Such an interesting story. I mean, the creatives in charge here are really coming out of the woodworks to make sure that these are really original stories. And that's so exciting for this fandom because
it's
nice to take a depart from the Skywalker saga directly.
Right. As some of the fans, more toxic fans, if I may throw that one out there, have said, the biggest complaint about Star Wars is they just kind of retell the same story over and over again. And now it's like, all right, we're not even getting a trilogy. We are getting standalone films in some capacity. And we're just going to get a story. Like, I love the idea of like a biblical epic involving the Jedi and I assume the Sith. I mean, if you're talking about the Dawn of the Jedi and the Force, so to speak, you're also talking about the bad part of that. You're talking about the Sith and how some come to use the Force for good and some come to use the Force for evil. I think it's going to be really exciting. Like, that's probably the movie I'm most excited about just because it's completely original. There's no, like, with the Mando movie, we've got all these characters and these storylines that are going to culminate into one. And Dawn of the Jedi is just not going to be that. It's going to be completely new characters, something we haven't really seen since Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And even then, we got a New Hope story with some of the older characters involving newer characters in the story instead. And speaking of Force Awakens, we got our final film that's been announced. Daisy Ridley is coming back as Rey to rebuild the Jedi Order. Now, this one is probably the most controversial in terms of,
I think so,
of the new films, because a lot of people just did not like the character of Rey. I actually like the character of Rey. I just felt like the writing for the sequels didn't do her justice. They didn't do any of the new characters justice for me. But the idea of getting a film with Rey 15 years after her last appearance and trying to rebuild the Jedi Order but not make the same mistakes, that excites me. And I like Daisy Ridley, and I think she's going to do a great job of kind of showing us her character's journey after that trilogy. How does she get better in the Force, and how does she become Rey Skywalker, carrying on that Skywalker legacy, right?
But also, like, I think one of the most interesting things that I think that is setting up is, who is she teaching, and what kind of conflicts are we going to see in this kind of story? Because rebuilding the Jedi Order comes with the same faults, or at least a deep inner looking for the faults of the previous Jedi Order. I think that it'll be cool to see what kind of new villain we'll see with that set of films. Because I'm sure it'll be one.
I mean, you
got to
think. Well, you know, it doesn't have to be. And that's the kind of the beauty of it, is if Rey's film is amazing, right, and people love it, then we could get more films set with Rey and a new trilogy with her and still have, like, I would assume we've only got three movies announced, but I would assume that if Mangold's Jedi film is amazing, then there will be more want for that kind of storytelling. So if Rey's movie can really grasp the concept of rebuilding the Jedi Order again, I mean, you got to think, like, galactically speaking, it's failed twice now. And why would anybody want her to redo that? Can she right the wrongs of the previous attempts of a Jedi Order? Can she do that? Who's she teaching? I really hope, like, maybe we can get John Boyega back and really flesh out his character. I see Rey's movie as the one with the most potential, in that you can right a lot of wrongs with this film that the sequel trilogy did, and retroactively make those films better by giving us more character development of Rey and other characters if they want to come back. I know Boyega has kind of said, I'm done with the Star Wars franchise as an actor. I just want to be a fan. And if that's the case, I respect his decision. But I also see it as, if they write it the right way, Finn could become what we always wanted him to be. You know, and canonically,
oh yeah,
the most recent holiday special showed, the Lego holiday special, showed that Finn was learning the ways of the Jedi. Like, he was practicing. So I'm like, I mean, you could do it. Finn could be a Jedi with Rey, and that's who they're centering around. But I don't know. I'm just excited for all three of these films. And we talked about it before we started recording. They've announced that the opening crawl will be back for all three of these films.
Oh yeah.
Which leaves us one question. If you bring back the crawl, the most iconic part of Star Wars is the music. Are you going to do John Williams' score at the beginning of each film? Where do we stand on that?
I think specifically with Mando and this Mandoverse, especially after today's episode, the like epic theme, not necessarily like the cowboy that big horn, I really line, like that.
Yeah,
I think that is suffice enough, because I also think, depending on what kind of tone they're going for with the movie, and of course it's something that's still in development, so, you know, we'll just have to see. But I think that Finn Goranson's score is so connected thematically to Mando that it would be more, I think it would be more appropriate to use his score or something like that for the opening crawl.
For me, I think if you're going to do the opening crawl, I think you just have to use John Williams' music for a couple reasons. I think, one, if you're going to do the full thing, the yellow font, Star Wars, and then, you know, a crawl to set up your movie, I think that it's too synonymous to not play just that opening theme. And then, you know, scored by Van Goranson or whoever's going to do the music, and bring elements of all these TV shows together, which I think Van Goranson does all the music for all the TV shows, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it's a great way to keep Williams' legacy going along with the Star Wars universe. And I saw a theory that on Twitter, someone said that they just have this theory that the essence of the Force in Star Wars is through the use of the music. And I kind of love that, because the music is so good and it embodies like everything that's going on in the films. But if you took the dialogue out and you just had the music, you would understand what the Force is trying to portray, right? So the essence of Darth Vader's evil force is embodied in the Imperial March. Luke's force, the good, is embodied in Luke's theme song. Like, I like that theory, and I think having that opening crawl theme with Williams would just kind of embody, like, this is a Star Wars movie, and this is where the Force is at. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. John Williams is one of those composers that his music is so distinct and characterized to these iconic films. You can't, and it's one of those things where, like, you can't have one without the other. You can't have Indy either without John Williams.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, he embodies so well this theme of mysticism in all of his music. And as a musician, I will tell you, like, his music is some of the hardest to play.
Sure.
It's very
complicated.
There's a saxophone concerto in the score for Catch Me If You Can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Escapades. It is incredible. It's beautiful music. But it's also very, like, characteristic of that film. So, like, the first movement of it, like, there's a lot of, like, snaps that you have to do with your fingers.
Right.
And, like, it works in this, like, triplet pattern. Like, it starts out and it's like, boo-dee-doo-dee, boo-dee-doo-dee, boo-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee, boo-dee-doo-dee. So it just sets up this, like, espionage kind of theme.
Yeah.
And it's just so Listen. Beautifully written. It's so characterized, you know.
Right.
It's unique to him, and I don't think that there's anybody who necessarily scores films like that anymore, outside of maybe Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer's great. There's a lot of great composers, but I would not hesitate to say, if you're talking movie composers, I just don't think anybody is better than John Williams. And to prove the theory, name a Star Wars movie, just Star Wars, that hasn't used his score in some capacity. Even the movies that, like, even like Rogue One,
Michael Giacchino
has elements of the Imperial March. And what? Nah, yeah. Get out of here. He is not better than Williams.
He's on the same level. I won't say,
but he's not better than Williams.
He's definitely not better than Williams, but, like, especially in terms of music, Giacchino, up, bro. Married life.
Okay, but
that
here's
theme,
the,
like,
thing with,
ugh.
Here's the so thing good. With him, though. Here's the thing with Giacchino. He does a lot of movies that have already been established with other music. He did the themes for, like, the Mission Impossible movies. Already has a theme song. So all he can do is try his best to spruce it up a little bit, right? Like, I feel like some of his scores are weak. Some of his scores are really, really good. I'm not going to take that away from him. And then other scores are, like, him doing something that, like, was created by somebody else. You know what I mean? And he just has to spruce it up. And it's no fault to him.
He did that with... He's got two main credits that are like that. He did Jurassic World. He did Mission Impossible. Right. And he did... And Rogue One. But then you look at, like, his stuff like The Incredibles. I mean, arguably one of the best superhero movies of all time. Up, Ratatouille, like, especially the Pixar scores. The score for Lost?
Star Trek? He did 2009 Star Trek. I mean, look, I'm not saying that he doesn't have great music in him. Yeah. But I'm saying, if you're talking the greatest movie composer ever, it's John Williams. Because yeah. of the iconography. And, like I was saying, like, Rogue One, Vader comes into play. They're going to play a little bit of that Imperial March, and they're going to have a little bit of Across the Stars from Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
You got Solo. Like, Solo. How are you going to do a Han Solo theme when Asteroid Field from Empire Strikes Back is there? They're going to play it when he's flying the Millennium Falcon. Like, you just have to have that. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Anyways, we went totally off kilter here. All that to say, I hope that whatever they do musically for the Star Wars films, that these three new movies are going to be amazing. I'm going to go in with not high hopes, but I'm going to be one of those that's defending all three of these movies in some capacity. I just think that they are really going to be good movies. Yeah. And we also got to react to keeping it in the Mandoverse talk. We finally have a trailer for Ahsoka, aka Rebels Season 5. Which, man, that trailer got me so hyped. Because let's just go ahead and spill the beans here. We're getting an adaptation of Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn with the return of Thrawn. We've got characters that showed up in today's episode of Mandalorian when we're recording from Heir to the Empire. I am beyond excited for how they're going to take that storyline and adapt it with these characters who we've already seen. Let's just say it. We got all the Rebels characters except for Kanan returning. The only person we didn't see was Zeb, but we've already seen Zeb in Mando. So you know he's there.
Yeah.
I mean, this is exciting. They have so much to work with. I get like these, I'm giddy. I get like these,
dude, no, I have
samurai vibes.
I got goosebumps from it because, you know, this idea that Star Wars thematically can be something so much bigger than sci-fi. Right, like Book of Boba Fett does an excellent job of being like a rooty tooty point and shooty western. Like that is in the grain.
I put that one on
that show.
I put that one as a spaghetti western because it's cheesy in a lot of ways, but they do a good job of keeping it honed in as a western slash gangster film.
But then you have this, like, you know, with Mando, I think you still have the like the Western elements of it, but you also like in season 3, we talked about this the other week. You've got your own NCIS episode set in Blade Runner, you know, with them chasing down a droid. That was so cool. And so now
it was fun to watch.
You've got this samurai show. I mean, it is essentially samurai show slash political thriller with Thrawn.
Right. It's like you have samurai action and story with it almost is like a Return of the King, Lord of the Rings kind of story with you're trying to get Sabine to rile up troops. You got to have an army to fight Thrawn, and you got Harris and Dula back, and you know, you got all these characters that have to come, like they have to join forces to be able to handle Thrawn. Because we all know, if you watched Rebels or if you read Heir to the Empire, you know that Thrawn is like the toughest military component in the Empire.
Man, and you know what? I'm excited to see if they bring in some of like the Thrawn book. Because when it like the beginning of that book, he's like stranded on a planet. And he is just pure evil and strength. He's like this demon just like mowing through this planet.
Right. I'm curious because the version of Thrawn that we got in Rebels was very much toned down. Not toned down in a bad way. Toned down and just very relaxed and very confident all in one. So I'm curious, are we going to get the same version? Because it is played by Lars Mikkelsen. He's returning. He did the voice in Rebels, and now he's coming back. I'm curious to see how he will play it live action and how all of it will play out. But I am so excited for Ahsoka. And we'll just jump to the Mandalorian episode reaction. This comes out next. This will come out Monday. We are recording on Wednesday. We've both seen the newest episode of The Mandalorian. So let's react.
Yes.
Maybe easily the best episode of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, we get so much in just 50 minutes, but we get Moff Gideon confronting the Shadow Council and discussing Thrawn's inevitable return, cloning, Project Necromancer. There's so much packed into that. It's almost impossible to to cram this into a small discussion.
I will say the biggest takeaway for me from this episode was the mention of Thrawn, the way Moff Gideon is kind of bad-mouthing Thrawn, and like obviously who's gonna turn this all around, you know what I mean? Could right. be the Armorer, because she's up there in space right now, but I don't imagine that going well either.
Yeah, it's I mean, this is maybe the scariest it's ever been for the Mandalorian, really and truly. I mean, first off, Gideon's hiding on Mandalore. That comes as a big surprise late in the episode. But I mean, kind of jumping into the middle of the episode, the humor, it's so well balanced where it's terrifying, it's hilarious, and then it's terrifying again, and it all feels natural. But let's get to the humor of Grogu getting IG-12 as a mech suit and just having yes and no. I mean, I thought that was hysterical, but I also loved, like, oh yes, give Grogu like the ability to be humanoid and not just be carried around in a ball, and the ability to communicate. I thought all of that was really well done.
Dude, I was rolling. I mean, I was laughing so hard with the yes, no button.
Oh, yeah. But it serves a purpose. So funny.
Yeah.
It serves a purpose because when you have two warring factions of Mandalorians trying to get together, tensions are high, and two Mandos, one from each side, get into a fight on the ship. And instead of letting them fight it out, Grogu steps in and is saying no and holding them back, and it stops them. And I love this. I love this part because you think this whole time it's Bo-Katan who's going to unify them, but she's like, I mean, we can't step in. What are we going to do? But Grogu steps in and she's like, you've taught your apprentice well to Mando. And he goes, he didn't learn that from me. And you just know, oh, Grogu's going to be the savior of the Mandalorians using the Jedi ways. He's going to use the Jedi teachings as a way of saying, if you want to survive, you can't fight on your own. And it's even mentioned, like, every time the Mandos fall, it's because of their own factions, their own hubris and anger towards different clans. And that, I just love that Grogu's unifying them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
I think that Grogu has such a special place in the balance of things, which is an interesting take on like the whole Order 66 thing. So, you know, I would love for next week to have some big moment where Grogu is seeing this newfound people that he's been kind of indoctrinated into, to see him almost lose that again, and to see the parallels between Order 66 and how he'll react in those situations. And maybe, who knows, we might get another flashback to a Mod Best, because that's still one of my favorite cameos in this whole season.
Oh, that was great. That was great. I love to see him back. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited. It was so tense, right? Like, you see they're on Mandalore and they get ambushed and then they run through, and I'm like, wait, how did this... everything starts looking Imperial, and I'm like, wait, how did... like, where are they? I thought they were on Mandalore. But then I realize, oh, they've been set up on Mandalore for a long time.
Yeah.
And Gideon is on Mandalore hiding out. And it's kind of funny because it's like the perfect place to hide is the place you would least expect, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's just hide on Mandalore. They think it's dead. The ones that do come here will just ambush them and take them all out. But man, the tension I had when they tie Din Djarin down.
Yeah.
And he's cut off from the rest of the group. And I go, oh my Lord, he's not the Mandalorian any longer. They're going to kill him. I really thought for a split second he might make an example of him, and all the Mandalorians will just look on it helpless.
Well, because right? We've seen it so many times before. We've seen that moment. Ned Stark. What else? Mm-hmm.
The Walking Dead name? Has done it how many times?
The Walking Dead? Yeah.
I mean, Negan hitting people with a baseball bat is like, he's gonna be made. You never know. You don't know who it's gonna be. But and I was really nervous.
Yeah, that's where,
and then
where,
he
like,
says, take him to the briefing room, and I'm like, what?
You get to that point too where you see it, and it's like, you almost want him to take that like R-rated route,
right?
With it, because like that's a huge, that's such a good moment. Because you're mm-hmm. like, oh snap.
It would suck to see Din Djarin just kind of like helmet thrown off and beheaded. You want him to have a hero's death. I mean, yeah, it stinks, but you want him to have a hero's death if he's going to go out.
Yeah.
Right. I don't care what the creators say about the Mandalorian is no longer Din Djarin. It's the Mandalorians, and is following everybody. So many different stories. He is still the Mandalorian. And that is proven by Carl Weathers' character calling him Mando. Like, he knows your name, right? But if he calls him Mando, you'd think everybody would just turn their heads. But no.
Yeah.
He's Mando. But yeah, RIP to, I call him Big Gun because I can't remember his name. But Pre-Vizsla. I thought that was a great hero's death. Yeah.
That was dope, dude.
I thought that was a great, great death. And I was like, oh my gosh, he just took out all these storm jet troopers. Like, he might actually make it out. And then you forget that they mentioned Praetorian guards in the beginning of the episode, and three of them just come out and take him out. Don't even break a sweat. And I was like, how? Like, how are you going to defeat these guys?
Dude, no. And that was like a pretty
that there was that
fight
was,
scene.
Yeah. That was a very wicked. It was good for PG-13 TV, you know?
Yeah.
I thought it was really, really well handled and very scary. Like, I don't know what's going to happen next week. What's a bold prediction for Mandalorian season 3 finale?
I think we're going to see the Mythosaur. I think the Mythosaur appearing in, like, Bo-Katan has the Darksaber now, yet
yeah.
She's still fighting with her pistols.
Yeah. Is she worthy? Is she the one? Is Grogu the one? He's got Jedi training.
Who knows, man? It could be. I would love to see that. I would love to see that.
I saw somebody come up with a theory that Mando will get his helmet ripped off in embarrassment by Moff Gideon in front of all the other Mandalorians. And in solidation, they will all take off their helmets, whether they took the creed or not. They will all take off their helmets, and then they will assumingly put them back on and, you know, fight. But I was like, oh, that'd be kind of a cool moment. Like,
puts on a helmet again.
Yeah. It's kind of like at the end of the Endgame where you just see Cap's perspective of all these portals opening up, and he's just like, heck yeah. And Thanos just kind of stands there and like watches. Imagine seeing Moff Gideon rip his helmet off, and you're thinking like, oh, this is it. And then they all take their helmets off in like solidarity, and then like they're ready to fight. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, something like that.
And you know probably, what? Like, but I think that Moff Gideon drastically underestimates the Mandalorian because he doesn't see them the same way he sees like himself as a person. You know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if, you know, remove the helmet to this imposter, and he then is able to put faces to every single one of these people.
Right. The ones that can overtake him.
that is very intimidating. So I'm very excited for an action-packed finale next week.
Oh man, I'm stoked. I'm ready. It's gonna make it's gonna make the whole season worth it. And one final thing that got announced, we probably won't talk about this long, is Bad Batch season 3 is taking its final season, which I'm really excited about. I won't talk about it because I don't think you finished season 2. But where season 2 ends is it sets up for a really good final season. When they said it's the final season, I was like, all right, they're going to do it right.
Yeah, dude. Bad Batch is such a dope like set of characters. If they ever decided to connect that like in between the prequels and the original trilogy like set that they have right now, I would love to see like a live action Bad Batch,
or at least some of the characters. Who knows, maybe Dave Filoni's Mandoverse movie, they'll show up as old clones.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one person we didn't mention in the Ahsoka trailer. No Rex. Will he show up? Will we get Tamara Morrison as Rex?
I know, dude. Or Commander Cody. Like, or if, like, what if we had like a, what if you had a Cody and Rex?
I think that's
reunion?
Coming. Maybe in Bad Batch. They leave some things in Bad Batch in season 2 that I think they're willing to pick up on. But anyways, that's our Star Wars talk for now. We will table this discussion because we are also pops. And we're going to start up top 5. Today, we're discussing top 5 television dads. And this was also suggested by your dad, Chris. I'm going to throw my own dad, Ryan,
thanks, pops,
into the mix. He gave me his top 5 TV dads. In no particular order, you got Andy Griffith, Mr. Cunningham from Happy Days, Conrad Bain from Different Strokes, Red Fox from Sanford and Son, and this is the one that I thought was going to be on your list, and it may still be, Tim the Toolman Taylor from Home Improvement. I said that is a really good one.
He's in my honorable mentions as Tim Allen.
Yeah, that's true. Tim Allen's going to make honorable mentions twice because he was also on top TV or top movie dads with Santa Claus.
But there is another one that we'll get to it later and we'll kind of break them down a little bit. There is one that your dad has in his top 5 that I also have in my top 5.
You kicked off last week's episode of top 5, so I'm going to kick off this week's episode. Number 5. I'm going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 this time. Number 5, I'm going to go Hal from Malcolm in the Middle. He's just a classic.
Oh, yeah.
He's a classic dad. He's insecure in a lot of ways. Bumbling. Foolish. Doesn't really know what to say all the time. But he's always there.
Yeah.
And I this is just, like, hilarious to me. The episode that I think it's the opening where he runs into the boys' room in a panic. And he says, "Who wants to make $5? And Dewey's like, "Make it 10. And he said, "Deal." And he just throws him out into the hallway and shuts the door. And you just hear his wife screaming. And I was like, that's perfect. I mean, that right there is just hysterical. Hal is Bryan Cranston, who is another television dad that may or may not be in somebody's top 5. We don't really know yet. But that's my number 5, Hal from Malcolm in the Middle.
My number 5 is Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
He's in my honorable mentions.
I mean, such a powerful actor and just such a present, and like his ability to listen and react as an actor is phenomenal, especially in kind of a dramatic production environment. That was kind of a crazy time for that show, but especially towards the end, you know, what a great TV dad.
I think Uncle Phil, he's a great dad to his own kids, and he really, I mean, it's really heavily personified in the episode where Will's dad comes and then he leaves and he just hugs Will, says, "Come here, son." And Will's just angry that his dad left again. And like, it, you just get emotional watching it because he's just, he is Will's dad.
Yeah.
As well, you know, and even though they don't get along because they are two different people, he accepts Will as his own. And I just, I think you're spot on.
Yeah.
Uncle Phil is just Papa Phil. I mean, he's great. For my number four, I'm going to say Homer Simpson. You'd think he might be higher on the list. If you're talking best dads of all time.
Yeah.
I think number four is a good spot because he's not the best dad of all time. He's pretty lazy. He's pretty stupid. But when you think about him as a father, he spends time with his kids. He's got pictures of his kids all along his post at work. He supports them in a lot of ways. But he's also, you know, dumb. He's Homer. Like,
yeah.
I think he's the perfect personification of a blue-collar dad that might not be the smartest, but he gives the necessary time to his kids.
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't love a good old Homer and Bart fishing trip?
No, absolutely. When he – what? He throws the thing in the lake and all the fish like come up to the top.
Throws the bug lighter in the lake and
and so my number four may come as a surprise. But it is also Bryan Cranston. I'm gonna say Walter Don't White.
Say it. Oh, I'm
gonna say Walter White. And
oh man, you gave me flack for Darth Vader.
So here's the thing, and this is kind of a really kind of ass backwards way of looking at it. I see him as a good and challenging father figure mentor for Jesse.
About his own kids?
That's a different story.
trying to attack Vader for being Leia's dad. He's also Leia's dad.
I know it's a controversial pick for sure. It's
controversial.
But you know,
when you think about what he does at the beginning of the show, he just resorts to cooking meth and selling it to make enough money for his family because he's refusing to take treatments for cancer. He's like, I'm just going to die, but I'm going to make sure that my family has enough money to live off of when I'm gone. However, at the very end of the series, his wife, Skylar, goes something along the lines of, "Did you do it for us?" And he goes, "No. I did it for me, or I kept going for me." And I'm like, I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, because at that point, like, and that it's the downfall, I think, of
it's a tragedy.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's definitely got like the tragedy elements. And like, when you look at it that way, like you still see kind of the other side of the equation for Walter White. But you also see this man drowning in trouble, drowning, right. And he continues to put himself in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when specifically when Bryan Cranston talks about as an actor, when he watches what's her name die,
Kristen Ritter's character, Jesse Pinkman's girlfriend, right?
Yeah, when he watches his girlfriend die, he talks about that as an actor, and it is such a dark approach.
He envisions his own child, right?
Yeah. Like he said, like literally, like there was one moment where he had kind of gotten so enveloped in that moment where like he was seeing his daughter. And I was like, yo, that's
how could you
that's
do that?
Awful. That's awful. Yeah, and you know what? Terrible. You know what I mean? Like you're in that moment, like, that's, I think that's kind of one of the biggest starts of a decline as his role as a father.
When he decides not to save her. Yeah. No, that's tough. Yeah. But I do agree. Like, listen, I put Vader as top, as in my honorable mentions. No.
No, he was your number five. He was your last one.
That's right. That's right. I take it back. Yep. I put him there. I will support the Walter White. I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
You know,
thanks.
In the words of old Ben Kenobi, from what I said and what you said is true from a certain point of view. I'll give it to you. My number three is Danny Tanner from Full House. The man had three daughters, a dead wife, and a career. And I think he balances it all pretty well. Now, he struggles at times, and I won't fault him for struggling. He's got two other dads that aren't dads to help him out, and Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joey. But Danny Tanner is always there for his daughters. And he maintains Madness. And he's such a good person because he lets Uncle Jesse and Aunt Becky move in with them. And he lets Uncle Joey move in and set up a recording studio in the basement and lets Uncle Joey live in a different room. Like, so many people go in and out of that house. But he's good to all of them. And he still remains a good father in all of that chaos. Like, I think that's just – Danny Tanner's just –
And Danny Tanner, I think one of the coolest parts about Full House and him as a father is, like, he does such a good job at creating a safe emotional space for his daughters, which, you know, can be a challenge at times. But he also, you know, he accepts help. You know, especially in one of the most awful situations you could truly be in, opening yourself up to be able to accept help and appreciate it, but still function after something like that is really cool.
Right. I remember an episode where Michelle she gets so upset because she was an infant when their mom passed away. So she's like, I don't even remember. I don't even know what she looks like. I don't even remember her. And Danny and everybody in the family just talks to her about her mom. And is like, look, we've got pictures. We've got all these memories to remind you, even if you didn't get to spend as much time with her. And that to me was just like, that's amazing. Like, I hope I can do that with, like, my grandfather and my cousin. Like, they're both passed. And my grandfather never met either of my kids. But I hope that I can at least show them memories that I had with them in hopes that they understand who their great-grandfather was. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who my cousin was. Even though he's not with us. Like, that to me is just that's a great feeling to be able to do that. So, ooh. Danny Tanner, number three.
Yeah. My number three is Andy Taylor from the Andy Griffith Show. That is your old school crunchy daddy. Yeah. and I love it. I absolutely love it. A classic
pappy.
Some of my, like, fondest memories as a kid was, like, being in my papa's house and Andy Griffith's show being on the TV, or, like, being in my Uncle Daryl's house and Andy Griffith being on the TV. Because it's just so old school. And, like, I feel like that's a show that, like, real Southerners know about. Because, like, I don't... Yeah. That show's kind of fallen to the wayside, you know? In terms so much of like where I mean, TV it is. I don't even think it's on Netflix anymore.
Yeah, TV is in such a not even a golden age. I mean, it's above golden, right? There's so much content, streaming and cable shows and everything, that, you know, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle of all things, you know. But that's a classic, and he's a classic. Yeah. Classic Pappy right there. What are we on? Number two. All right, number two, I'm going to go with Julius from Everybody Hates Chris, Terry Crews. He's just like, he's that dad that works all night, sleeps all day for his family. He's a penny pincher. You know, I love, like, classic jokes is like, that's 14 cents of milk you just spilled on the table. You know what I mean? Like, I love that he's just able to pop these numbers of prices in. That to me, like, he's great. But there's also scenes where, like, someone's yelling at Chris and he's like, or bullying Chris on the streets, and he just goes up and talks to him and is like, I'll be there in your sleep. I'll be there when you're taking a shower. I'll be there if you continue to talk to my kid and bully my kid. And I'm just like, dude, that is awesome. He's so intimidating. He's he's number two for me. Classic. Classic dad.
My number two, and this is also episode came out yesterday, Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
Ted Lasso. I don't think we've had the chance to talk about that show yet on the podcast, but I have only recently started watching it. I maybe started a couple weeks ago with the first season, and I'm all caught up now. Ted is such a complicated person, and
he is,
you know, the relationship that he has with his son is so, the way he speaks of it and the way that he approaches that, and especially like recently watching him grow with his mental health as a parent.
Right.
Especially in spoilers, if you haven't caught up, there's a scene in the newest episode where, like, he gets into, he's talking about Henry and he starts to have a panic attack. He's like, he's okay.
Uh-huh.
He's okay. He's okay. All right. You're good. But it's a really powerful moment because you see his growth from, from previous seasons regarding his mental health.
I took my headphones out because I have not had a chance to watch episode 3 of season 3 yet. So I don't know what Peyton just said, but I'm gonna go with it. And you know what? I do agree. Ted Lasso is a great dad because you would think he's a bad dad and taking a job that's thousands of miles away, but when in context of his divorce and saying I took the job because I thought space for my wife is what would help our relationship in the overall grand scheme. And Isn't it just inspirational that he can still maintain a great relationship with his son, even though he doesn't see him all the time? And also, he is a dad to that soccer team for so many.
Oh, my God.
The soccer players they need somebody to help them out. Sam Obisanya gets really angry because Jamie Tart is coming back to the team in season 2. And he's just like, look, like, just deal with it. You know, like, it stinks right now, but just trust me. I know what is good. Be a goldfish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Be a goldfish. Happiest animal. 10-second memory. Like, like, that's just great advice. I wish I could practice it more than I actually do. Probably should. But that's a great pick. It's a great pick. My number one.
Yeah, man.
My number one is another semi-controversial one, and his character is a complicated one. But Henry Spencer from Psych is my number one TV dad. There's a contentious relationship with him and Sean, in which Sean blames him for his mom leaving. He hates his father because his dad was a cop and instilled all these things to make Sean a great detective. And just wanted the best for his son. But Sean hates that. But what I love about that show and about Henry Spencer as a dad is every single episode, Sean goes to his dad for some advice in the case that they're working. And his dad doesn't hesitate. His dad doesn't hesitate to help him out in any way. Even if it's like he's not giving him the answers that he needs, he's saying, well, go back and think about these things that I taught you, and the lesson will always come back to help you out. And I just think that, like, even when your son or your kid is like maybe not the nicest to you because they don't really understand something, they're just, you know, they're holding a grudge, you're still there for them. And over time, their relationship opens so much that when Henry gets shot in an episode, Sean is like on fumes trying to make sure that his dad's going to be okay. And yeah, that to me is like the perfect, they get it. Their relationship is fixed. And that is just wonderful. And I like Henry Spencer is just great. He's just a great dad. Yeah. Reminds me a lot of my own dad.
Yeah, man. That's my number one. I love that show. That's such a good pick. That's a really good pick. My number one children's show is Bandit from Bluey.
I even Bandit think about it.
Is a committed player to the game. Man is in there. Man is on it. But also Bandit's perspective, I think, is really, really good as a parent. I think like the way you see him play and interact with his kids, it's just so wholesome.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, just very entertaining. I think it's perfect kids television.
Agreed. I mean, we talked about it last week. Like Bandit helps us as dads have some perspective on how to keep it going, how to keep up with the kids.
Oh yeah.
It's hard to keep up with kids, especially the older they get, the faster they get, the more dangerous they get.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the second children. All second children. Good luck. But Bandit is there to help keep the kids entertained. And I love that pick. That's a great pick.
Oh yeah.
Some honorable mentions.
I think we're both on the same page for a special entry here into the top five.
Right. Wipe out all the top fives that we just said because they don't come close to this man.
This man is the TV dad. I think we should just say it. This is the GOAT of TV dads. 3, 2, 1.
Phil Dunphy from Modern Family. He is the best at giving out terrible puns, terrible dad jokes. He's obsessed with magic. But you know what I love about Phil Dunphy? He is always present. And that's what I love about Phil Dunphy.
Well, and
he spends so much time with Luke, and when you don't feel like he spends enough time with like Haley, you get an episode of him and Haley going and touring colleges, and they like slide down a hill on trays like he used to do in college, and like you just see him spend time with all of his kids, even when he doesn't really understand what they're coming from. He makes it a point to learn. And to find a way to do it. And I commend him for that.
And you know, like, Phil, I think even beyond being present, is so emotionally in touch with himself and is able to have regulated conversations with every single one of his kids. It's not the same approach for everyone. And you see, like, especially like the scene where they're with Haley in college, and he's like fussing at her about something. He's lecturing her, and they're arguing, and he like really like, you see Phil be firm. In that moment, it's not like a, oh, like I'm scared. It's more of a, no, like, hey, stop. This, yeah. Here is what I'm trying to say to you, and here is the reality of this situation. And we always need that kind of guidance from our dads. You know what I mean?
Right.
We need to have not just like a, no, this is what I'm saying, and I'm, you know, an order, but more of a like, hey, let's regroup. This is what we need to focus on. This is the issue. Here is the solution. And I think obviously Haley, like, she really pushes that boundary. And I think that's such an, I think it's like season 4. I don't remember which season it is.
Yeah. No, I agree. He's so understanding. You never get a feeling from Phil that he ever gets angry at his kids. There's times where he lets out some pent up emotion because the kids just aren't listening, or he feels like they're taking advantage of him. But like you said, it's not to scare the kids. It's just to let them know, this is how I feel. I'm your parent. You have to at least understand what I'm saying, at the very least. I'm not forcing you to do anything, but as the adult, I'm telling you to do something. And I really like that. I love when he makes Alex and Haley like clean the bathroom.
Yeah.
And he just makes it increasingly grosser. Oh man. And he's the one that they're like scared of for a second. Like, I just really like that. Like,
there's way to the turn episode it too, where hold on, it's either his appendix is rupturing or he has like kidney stones, and he refuses to go to the hospital, and all the kids are like, oh my god, dad, are you gonna die? And they're like screaming and crying. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Phil Dunphy, that's the GOAT.
He's the ultimate TV dad.
Trumps everybody. List off a couple of your honorable mentions, other ones that just like maybe quite didn't make the cut.
I had Carl Winslow from Family Matters. Uncle Phil was on my honorable mentions for sure. I had Walter White on there, but it was more of like I don't really know. And then my Darth Vader TV dad is Tony Soprano. I think he's a better dad than Walter White. In that, he's a head of a mafia, sure, but he provides for his family. There's a great scene. I think it's the season 3 or season 4 finale, where him and his son are on a boat, and he's just teaching his son to drive the boat. Right, it's a very wholesome. The whole season's just been chaotic, and lots of crazy stuff has happened. And to end on a father and son just spending time together, learning how to drive a boat, like that, to me is like, that drives the family element of that show so well. I also like,
especially with a show like The Sopranos, like that is what's at stake. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like. Right. That show is so good about, like, here's the good. You better not mess it up.
He's all about protecting his family, but he also – his real family. But he's also committed to doing right by the family, the mob, so to speak. And I – that's a great show. And I think he's definitely a top TV dad, just in the bare elements.
Yeah.
But again.
My honorable mentions. I had Homer on my list. Yeah. Bob from Bob's Burgers.
Oh, that's a good one.
Jack Pearson from This Is Us.
You know, he was on a lot of lists that I looked at.
Yeah.
For inspiration. I was like, I can't.
Especially like that there's a scene in the beginning where like the third baby doesn't make it. And he sits down and has that conversation with the doctor. And he talks about like the sourest lemons that life has to offer and makes something that might resemble lemonade. Yeah. That is such a powerful moment. And you know, just reassuring that moment where he's being reassured that he is leaving the hospital with two babies and a healthy wife. Is such an emotional scene, and you only see that character in flashbacks in that show too. But it's such a good show. I love his
presence.
Is Us.
His presence throughout that whole show, even when he's not on screen, is
yeah,
it's powerful. You feel it.
Oh yeah.
You got any more honorable mentions?
Mm-mm. No, those are my. That's my last ones. Yeah.
Well, that's our top five TV dads. Let us know when you hear the show on Facebook, Instagram, what you guys think we should have our next top five on. So we hope you guys enjoyed our top five. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We got a little bit of a Star Wars centric episode, but like we said, Star Wars Celebration was just too much.
So much to talk about. So much news coming out about the franchise as a whole. And like I said in the beginning, like I completely retract my statement. Like this is such a cool approach to what Star Wars can be.
Yeah, it's a testament to Lucasfilm and to Disney for thinking outside the box on what to do about Star Wars movies. Because I'll be honest, it's been 4 years since I've seen a Star Wars movie in the theaters, and I kind of miss it.
Oh yeah,
kind of miss it. I miss the theatricality of the series, and I think that the direction that they're going in is going to get a lot of people in seats. So we are excited. Absolutely. And I think it's great because this is pop's culture, and this is going to just give us so much to talk about in the future. We will talk about the news that comes out. We will talk about so much pop culture. But for now, we are signing off. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 3 of Pop's Culture.
Thank you so much. Make sure you guys hit that share button, pass around the episode to your friends, and download them so you can listen to them on the go anytime you want.
Oh yeah. Give us some follows on social media at Pop's Culture on Facebook. We're working on getting some other social medias up here shortly, so bear with us. We're still an infant. But this has been successful. Thank you so much for listening. Stay posse. Awesome.